for invasion. This is Indie Invasion. Flickered off the golden tendrils, oil lamps on tall wooden staves providing an amber, uneven light. Carter squatted in front of a tall golden shape. One could almost call it a machine, yet there was something organic about it, something unsettling, that could not be quite pinned down. As he had suspected, it appeared that this device was the source of the tendrils he noted earlier. It was most curious. The age of the temple suggested that no such device should exist. Yet here it was, its tendrils spread wide amongst the serried canopic jars. The initial intrusion into the chamber some days ago was brief, but the studies of the canopic jars and chambers since had led Carter to a very interesting conclusion. Every time one touched a jar, there was a feeling that one was being watched, along with a susurrating whisper of barely heard voices. Ever a practical man, Carter initially discounted this as a superstitious effect of the strange environment he found himself in. But as evidence mounted, and Carter was never one to discount evidence, he began to form the opinion that there was some kind of mystical activity occurring. Until recently, Carter would never have counted such a thing, but his recent studies into alchemancy had broadened his mind. He was not an expert in the art yet, but he could see the value of becoming skilled in it. It was this device, this node, that was powering the canopic jars. The tendrils apparently drawing the energy, souls, if you will, from the jars into a central pool for a purpose unknown. Hieroglyphs around the chamber, hidden amongst more general notes to the glory of one named Sinusret, gave Carter some valuable clues in how to harness the power of the node. It would appear the good Egyptian folk interred here never quite worked out how to access the node's power. But they were close. Very close. And Carter now knew what to do. "I don't think we should meddle, Carter," the voice of Indigo echoed in the chamber as she walked up behind the studious figure. "We don't know enough about what this does."
"I am inclined to agree," Carter replied. "There is great power here. I can feel it. But one generally finds that with great power comes great risk." He rose and dusted off his coat. "Best we continue our studies, and the best course of action will become apparent, I'm sure." With that, he turned and called to the Bedouin workers who dusted at the hieroglyph-covered walls and shoveled sand from buried canopic jars. "Pack up for the day. Return to the camp," he ordered, and within minutes, the chamber fell into darkness, lit only by a single lamp. As silence fell, a figure emerged from behind a large, brightly painted statue of Set. There was a quiet rustle as a large mechanical hawk, which sat upon his heavily gloved hand, adjusted its position. Horus de Havilland had been at dinner last night when Carter discussed his recent discoveries with Agatha and Indigo. It infuriated him that he was rarely included. That incident in Cairo was weeks ago, and the lady had been fully compensated in any case. He knew that this device held power, perhaps unlimited power, and if there was one thing Horus liked, It was power. Normally, this was provided to him by his father's wealth. But once the letter Carter had written reached home, that particular source of prestige may well be curtailed. "Damn his eyes," Horace muttered. "The man has no sense of his position. How dare he report on me to my father like I was some recalcitrant schoolboy?" He stalked across the chamber, clicking his fingers and igniting a small flame from his hand. One thing Horace liked was to read. For all his failings, he was clever and rather studious when not otherwise engaged. The voyage from London, long and slow, gave him plenty of time to study, and very little access to the kinds of hedonistic delights that he usually found so distracting. Carter's library, it had to be said, was excellent, and it was to the tomes of lore on the art of alchemancy that Horace was drawn. He learned the basics of the art back in London, as it was fashionable in the right circles to be able to call small amusements, as the invocations were so often called at the right parties. The books available to him on the voyage had expanded his horizons greatly, and he now knew a good selection of rather powerful invocations that had been of use in escaping a number of rather indelicate situations in Cairo. The last one, however, found him caught short of essences, and indeed, of trousers. He now stood in front of the device and the page of notes, pilfered from Carter's desk by a servant with a fondness for gin and willingness to be bribed, showed Horace just how to activate the node. Quite what the activation would do, Horace was not certain. But his self-confidence, and perhaps arrogance, would not allow any doubt as to the wisdom of this course of action. Power needed to be pursued. He understood this, and any power worth having required one to take a leap of faith at some stage. This would be Horace's leap. He bent and felt about for the small button that would unlatch what Carter assumed was a control panel of sorts. His long, thin fingers found it and depressed the brass switch, causing a panel to slide upwards, revealing a hand-shaped depression with small golden nubs, each with a hieroglyph embossed upon it at each fingertip. Placing the mechanical hawk carefully on a nearby canopic jar, Horace removed the heavy leather glove and placed his hand into the indentation. He felt a tingling warmth in his palm, glanced down at Carter's notes. The glyphs were mentioned, but now, in front of the machine, Horace realized he understood less than he thought he had. "Nothing ventured, nothing gained," he murmured as he pressed down on the nub. The notes said this would activate the device. There was a deep, booming hum, and the chamber shook. Dust and stucco fell from the ceiling, toppling canopic jars. In his peripheral vision, Horace saw the golden tendrils thrash briefly, and if his impression were correct, two began to snake in his direction. The hum evolved into a great rising whine, the vibrations shattering at least one pillar, the great bulwark collapsing in a cloud of sand and dust. At this juncture, Carter returned at a run. Indigo, just behind him, took the long flight of stairs three at a time. She sprinted towards Horace, whose shocked face was now pale and sweaty with terror, tackling him and knocking him sideways in a spray of shattered terracotta canopic jars. Carter made for the control panel, reaching to press the nub he hoped would deactivate the node. But as he did so, a great burst of light emerged from a portal at the top of the device. The light coalesced into a form familiar to Carter. Set had arrived.
Thanks, guys, for listening to today's tales. You can find our Indie Invasion podcast on all podcast platforms, including Podbean, Google, and iTunes. And please visit us on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, and if you can, support us on Patreon/IndieInvasion. And feel free to email us with any questions or comments at IndieInvasion@gmail.com. And remember, guys, don't forget to prepare yourself for the invasion.